Hey, welcome to It's Just Life with mother-daughter combo Karen and Gia. In this podcast, we'll chat about the ups and downs of life here on planet Earth. Come along for the ride.
Hey everyone, welcome to It's Just Life. This is Karen, and I'm glad you're here with us today for episode number 19.
Hi guys, it's Gia, and welcome to It's Just Life podcast. We are mother and daughter combo. I'm the daughter, and Karen's my mama. And I'm excited about our episode today because we're going to be talking about the 2016 Olympics, which are currently happening.
Yay!
And it's been so much fun to watch them and so inspiring and such a positive thing in our world to bring people from all over the planet together. And so we have some lessons from the 2016 Olympics that we want to talk about, some amazing stories that have happened that are inspiring and can give us some awesome pointers on how to live life.
Yeah, so both Gia and I are great fans of the Olympics, and we've just really, really both enjoyed watching the competitions and hearing all the stories of the athletes. So we felt like it was just natural for us to present that to you and talk with you about what we've been learning and what we're taking away from these Olympics as some very special moments. So one of our first lessons that we wanted to mention is this lesson to get back up again after you fall, which is something that we all need to remember. It's normal to fall. We all fall all the time. We have to remember how important it is to get back up again and keep going and not dwell on the fall and not stay stuck in that place and be discouraged. So one of the athletes I wanted to mention was Ethiopian runner Etinesh Diro, and she was the favorite to win gold in the women's steeplechase, but during her preliminary heat, she fell and lost one of her shoes. She actually tried to put the shoe back on, but it was taking too much time, and she was falling way behind her competitors, so she threw the shoe off the side of the track and started running with one bare foot and one shoe on, ran as hard as she could, and she got up to seventh place, and this was the preliminary heat again, so she didn't even make it into the finals, and she was favored to win the gold, but she was so courageous to get up and run without her shoe and to finish the race no matter what, even when she started so far behind. She knew that she wasn't going to be able to win. She wasn't going to be able to be in the top three, which is what it would take to get into the finals. So, but she ran her heart out. She ran as hard and fast as she could in spite of knowing that, and ran with one shoe on and one barefoot to get up to seventh place. And I felt so much admiration for her that she had enough pride in herself and self-esteem to say, I came here to run this race and I am finishing it. And it doesn't matter what place I'm in, I'm going to finish this race, even if I have a sore barefoot.
Yeah, I love that. She is so brave for being able to do that. And it just kind of is another reminder that sometimes the story is more inspiring than not. And the fact that she did that and made history with that story is kind of even more important than if she would have won gold. And we have another example of someone falling. And this was Mo Farah for Great Britain, I believe. He was running the 10,000 meter run in the finals, and he was also favored to win. He fell, but he got up and was able to catch up and win gold. And
wow,
that was like incredible to see. So, he had the whole crowd behind him and had to be so proud that he could get up and go and still win. I mean, that's incredible. But nonetheless, I mean, we wanted to point out that both of these runners were admirable for getting up. You know, Etinesh Diro did not win the race, but she's still a winner for being so courageous and for showing everybody how to keep going in the face of failure and roadblock. And then, of course, Mo Farah shows us that you know, sometimes you really do, you still succeed despite a major setback. So I thought both of those stories were so inspiring.
Yeah, and I was inspired by the fact that you have to get up pretty quickly. You can't sit there and feel bad about the fact that you fell, and you can't sit there and be in despair and anxious. You have to immediately say, nope, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to get up. I'm moving on. I'm not staying here in this place. And so, yeah, I felt equally inspired by both of those stories, even by Etinesh, who wasn't able to go on to the finals, didn't win a medal, even though she was favored to win the entire event. So, so for me, both of those stories back to back were very inspiring.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then our next story, our next lesson was do your best and know that you are enough exactly as you are. And so this was a really touching story for me. One of the things that I'm always aware of in the Olympics is how many athletes come to compete in the Olympics, and yet how few actually go home with medals. So the vast majority of athletes who are there competing will never win anything. And yet they've trained just as hard and just as long as the other athletes, but they come there for the honor of getting to compete in the Olympics, even though they won't come home with a medal. And this was an athlete, Etemoni Timwani, and he was the only athlete representing his country, which is the island Tuvalu, a tiny Polynesian island that has less than 11,000 people. So his entire island where he lives actually has fewer people living on it than there were athletes competing in Rio in the Olympics. So his country also is very poor, but Tuvalu was very honored to be able to send Timwani and a small delegation to the Olympics in Rio. He was the only athlete, but they sent a few other people from their country as part of a delegation. And Timwani was entered in the men's 100-meter race, and he was the very best athlete of his entire country, but he turned out to be the slowest of the 86 runners in the 100-meter race. I mean, think of it, he's up against these powerhouse countries that have, like the U.S., we have this collegiate training program. You know, all of our runners are on NCAA college teams and get so much training and so much support and competition before they ever make it to the Olympics. So here's this athlete from the tiny, poverty-stricken country of Tuvalu, came in tied for last place in the 100-meter heat that he ran in. But he was overjoyed and extremely proud of himself and extremely honored. And he is going to go home as a hero of his entire country just for having been there and just for having competed in the Olympics. And so the message is that all we're asked to do is just the best that we can do. We don't need to compare ourselves with others. We don't need to be as good as anyone else is. We don't need to be better than anyone else is. We're just asked to be ourselves and be who we are and do the best we can do. And that's enough. That's always enough.
Yeah, it's so sweet. I love it that these smaller countries are starting to send athletes to the Olympics. When I was watching the opening ceremony, I, for the first time, had the experience of, you know, I've always been proud to be American and proud of the U.S. and all of our athletic accomplishments in the Olympics. We've always done so well, and I've always been proud of that. But this opening ceremony, there were a lot of American athletes, you know, chanting USA, USA in the camera. And I just found myself kind of feeling like, yeah, you know, duh, like we have tons of people and, like you said, tons of money and amazing athletes and programs to train people. And I want to see these little countries. I want to chant for them, you know, like I want to chant Tuvalu or, you know, yeah, Tuvalu. Because it's just so touching that, the Olympics are more and more globally connected, like every Olympics. Every time we get together, we can invite people from even smaller nations. I just think that's amazing. Our next lesson from the Olympics is don't feel sorry for yourself. Recognize that your setbacks are your greatest strengths. And we have such an inspiring story for this lesson from Yusra Mardini, who is a Syrian refugee, and she helped lead the 10-person refugee team in the Olympics. This is the first Olympics we've ever had a team of refugees represented, which is so incredible. And I know the Syrians have suffered so much, and she's only 18 years old and made the Olympics in swimming. But before the Olympics happened, she was training in Syria, you know, during the war, and had talked about how her training center with the pool and it had holes in the roof because of bombings. And she and her family fled from Syria as refugees, and they were on a boat in the Aegean Sea. And they had about 20 people on this boat that was meant to carry only 6 people. And suddenly the motor went out on the boat in the middle of the Aegean Sea. And Yusra and her sister, as well as 2 other people on the boat, were the only ones who knew how to swim. And not only did she know how to swim, but she even said, like, it is her home. It's the most comfortable place. And she remembered thinking, how could I die in my element, in water, where I feel most comfortable, where I feel home? And so she and her sister and the 2 other people jumped into the water, and they were able to swim and pull the little boat along with them. And they swam for 3 hours, finally pulling the boat to shore and saving everyone's lives on the raft. And God, it was such an empowering story. And yet, so she was so humble, and she never made herself a victim, you know, or felt bad for herself, for her setbacks, or her situation. She was so brave and such a hero to use her assets in order to push forward. So she ended up not making the finals in her event, the women's 100-meter butterfly, but she is such a champion, and I love to tell her story because I think that kind of bravery is really how we view Olympic heroes.
Yeah, I just get goosebumps when I hear that story, and having heard her speak and seeing her face, and what a like beautiful soul she is, and such a sincere person. She's totally a hero for the world. She's a hero for other refugees from her country. She's a hero for women and girls because she had the courage. You know, the courage to actually to get in the water and swim in order to save the lives of other people. And that's phenomenal to me. What a role model she is. So our next lesson learned is to see the higher purpose. So I think sometimes we end up becoming very metal focused, and probably those of us from the U.S., tend to be focused on medals because, frankly, athletes from our country win a lot of medals. And sometimes we talk about, oh, isn't it heartbreaking? This person didn't win the gold. They only won silver. How sad that is for them. Like, what a tragedy. And it makes you want to stop for a moment and say, let's get real here. Let's get real about what actually is hard in life, and not winning a gold medal, winning a silver instead, is not one of the bigger tragedies that you can face in life. And there are athletes who've come here to accomplish a higher purpose, and their focus is on doing something bigger and sending a bigger message out to the world. And so for me, this Olympics was a time when what I saw were a lot of barriers being broken down. So this was a phenomenal event, and probably everyone saw this race or heard about it later. South African runner Wade van Niekerk smashed the world record in the men's 400-meter race and won a gold medal, the very first gold medal for South Africa in this Olympics. He ran the race in the 8th lane, the outer lane of the track, which is the worst position you can be in, because from the 8th lane, you can't see anyone else running. You can't see what any of your competitors are doing. You have only your own inspiration and drive to go on to run. And he absolutely killed it, smashed the world record in this run. And it was only him running. He never saw a single competitor next to him. He just ran his heart out and ran as fast as he could to win the gold medal in that race and set this new fantastic world record. But it turns out that Wade, being from South Africa, Wade's mother was also a world-class runner when she was younger, but she was not allowed to compete in the Olympics because she was black and because South Africa had apartheid at that time. So she was not allowed to be on the South African Olympic team. So as Wade was running in this race, he was running for his mother, who never got to compete. He was running his heart out for himself, but also for his mom, to give her the thrill of a vicarious victory that she never, ever got to see because she wasn't allowed to compete. And so his race was such a symbol of this barrier of apartheid being broken down and in South Africa, and that now every qualified athlete is able to be on the team and can run. And then a second thing about Wade is that his coach is a 74-year-old woman. And I found that remarkable as well, because I've just never heard that before, especially in running, for a runner to have a woman coach who's that old. And I just thought that was remarkable and beautiful, and another barrier to age, that you're never too old to be a coach and to inspire someone else to be their best.
Yeah, that is such a sweet story. I'm very touched by that, and so happy to see these, like you said, these cultural and social barriers getting broken down. And we have a couple other examples of that as well. Simone Manuel is the first African-American woman to win gold in a swimming competition. And as we all know, it's kind of a well-known sociocultural thing. It's kind of a stereotype that black people can't swim well, but that's not because they're not able, only because swimming was off limits to blacks in U.S. public pools until the 1960s. And so they've been very much behind, you know, white people and other ethnicities in terms of their swimming training. But now that black people are swimming, I'm sure they'll be taking it over soon, because they're so athletic and so driven and so passionate. And so it's awesome to see that kind of stereotype getting squashed. And we also have Ibtihaj Muhammad, who is the first Muslim American woman to compete in a hijab and win a medal in fencing. And I also saw a beach volleyball women's team from Egypt who also competed in a hijab. And that was so cool to see.
Yeah, I feel so excited to see these women who in the past, even in their own countries and cultures or their own religions, might not have been allowed to compete, and to see them coming to the Olympics and being on this public stage and being able to wear their, you know, their normal dress and participate in the event, and having the courage to be out there in front of the world, knowing that they would probably be criticized by some people, but to just face up to that and be the athletes that they are and the competitors that they are, but be fully themselves and come wearing the dress that they would normally wear on any given day in their own country.
Yeah, it's so cool. And I've been so inspired by all of the female athletes this Olympics. And I feel a change in myself at enjoying women's sports even more than men's. And I honestly can say that that's a new thing for me. Like, I was a female athlete, but there was something about, you know, men's sports are typically more popular. They're more exciting. They're more aggressive. But this Olympics, I've been blown away by all of the female athletes and the way that the feminine changes the game. Because things like basketball and soccer and beach volleyball and indoor volleyball, they're all different because it's a team sport. And when it's women, it's a much more strategic game. It's a lot more about teamwork and passing and working together and strategy compared to, like, when men play sports, it is often dominated by strength and power. And if you're the strongest and biggest on the team, you definitely can dominate. And unlike in women's sports, it's a lot more about teamwork, communication, strategy, and I'm just like so excited to see it happening.
Yeah, yeah, it's fantastic. And you cannot watch Katie Ledecky in the swimming pool and not be excited about women athletes. You know, when we watched her swim the 800 meter race, which normally is kind of boring because it's long, you know, a lot of laps back and forth across the pool. But here she is, the entire race, she's so far ahead of the world record and ahead of all of her competitors that it's mind blowing. And so, you know, she was incredible. She should inspire everyone with her athleticism and her swimming ability. And then again, with her humility and her grace after winning a race, and how just how caring she seemed for the other athletes in the pool. And I just thought that was really a beautiful example of the feminine in competition.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Katie as well. And I posted on social media like a picture of her after she had come up after finishing that race. And she's looking out at the scoreboard, and literally every other lane, every swimmer has their head underwater and they still haven't finished. And she's just gazing out. It's so cool.
Yeah.
And I said in my post, I was like, some Olympians can bend time. You know, because it's just mind-blowing. Like you said, she was getting faster every lap. And to smash her own world record over and over and over again is just incredible. And it really shows you how powerful it is to believe in yourself and to set your mind to something.
Our next lesson was to, and I already alluded to this with Katie Ledecky, to be humble and celebrate your competitors. And so, you know, one thing that I think I saw a little too much of in this Olympics so far has been some arrogance on the part of certain athletes who really celebrated themselves after a victory and a win. And but there were a few examples of athletes who seemed to be genuinely happy for their competitors. And one example was Allison Felix, who was, oh, now I'm going to forget what race she was in, but do you know she was in
was the 400.
The women's 400 meter. She was favored to win the gold, and she lost it at the wire to her competitor, who lunged at the wire, basically fell across the finish line and skidded across, but just barely edged her out of that gold medal. So this is a case when Allison really wanted the gold medal and thought she would win it and found out that she got silver instead. But she went back to the woman who beat her and leaned down. The woman was laying on the ground still, completely exhausted. She leaned down and shook her hand and congratulated her. And I was touched because I knew Allison's heart was basically broken because she wanted that medal so much, but she was a big enough competitor that she could go back to the woman who beat her and beat her by falling across the line, basically, and congratulate her and be happy in whatever way she could for that woman's victory. And then there was something I saw, so I'll mention this, but there was something I saw from Michael Phelps that was a positive thing, which was he also got beaten out of a gold medal and tied for silver, and he got beaten by 21-year-old Joseph Schooling of Singapore, who has been a fan of Phelps since childhood. And back in 2008, before the Beijing Olympics, Joseph Schooling had a photograph taken of himself and Phelps, and Phelps was his idol at that time as he was just getting started in competitive swimming. And so Schooling comes back all grown up, competes against Phelps in the race, and beat him out for the gold medal, which was really shocking. But I actually saw Michael Phelps go give him a hug. And when the media questioned Michael about, wow, how devastating was this? And he said, Joseph has worked really hard for this. And I was happy to see him win because he's been, you know, he's been he's been working and practicing such a long time, and he's wanted this so much, and I'm happy for him that he won. So I was really happy to see that display of humility and the idea of let's celebrate the other guy. Let's celebrate that we're all trying to do our best here.
Yeah, that was really refreshing to hear about, because that is in contrast to the typical Michael Phelps behavior. You know, he's a little full of himself, but he's freaking amazing. So, like, why not, you know? But they did actually make a big deal out of his rivalry with Chad Leclo, who's a South African swimmer who beat Michael in the last Olympics, and I think it was the 200-meter butterfly or something. And Phelps did go on to beat Chad Leclo this Olympics, and Chad didn't even medal. It was very close, but he actually didn't even medal. And I mean, I don't want to say Michael rubbed it in his face, but he was definitely, like, you know, pretty proud of himself.
Yeah.
And, it's interesting. We can all be proud of Michael as well, but it definitely inspires people more and touches the heart more to see an incredible athlete rooting for their competitors, or, you know, celebrating a competitor who beat them. I think that's so honorable.
Yeah. And I think it's fine to be proud of our accomplishments. I think we should be. I think we, you know, we're entitled to that, to be pleased and excited and proud when we accomplish something that we've worked at and do something great. But it's equally amazing when we can be kind to someone else, and when we can be happy for someone else who's also doing well, and even overcome our own disappointment or jealousy or whatever we're feeling, and celebrate the fact that, wow, somebody else did something amazing, and that makes all of us better. That's a good thing for all of us. Whenever anyone is great and does their best and wins, that makes all of us better.
Yeah, absolutely. So our final lesson we've learned from the Olympics, which is such a big one, and I know we need to all take this home with us, is that we have to believe in ourselves no matter what. And, you know, I was referencing Katie Ledecky, and she's seriously a magician. She, like, could bend time because she was so strong mentally and so powerful in her belief. That she could get her body to swim faster every single time she raced in the Olympics and continued to beat that record. She didn't let any glass ceiling, you know, hold her back. For her, the sky was, you know, the universe is the limit. Like, she could keep going. That was so cool to see. And I'm also a really big fan of Kerry Walsh Jennings, and I've been obsessed with the women's beach volleyball team.
Mm-hmm.
Kerry is actually undefeated in beach volleyball in the Olympics, and it is so cool to see her. She's had a few different partners on her team over the years. Most people know she won 3 gold medals with Misty May Traynor, who is now retired. And this Olympics, Kerry has been competing with April Ross, who was actually lost to Kerry in the 2012 London Olympics and got silver in beach volleyball. So now they're teammates. And it is so incredible to watch them together. And I just noticed, you know, Kerry is definitely the veteran. Like, she's been playing for a long time. She's been in all kinds of stressful game situations and close games, and she's always pulled out the winner. And I just watch her, and she's incredible. Like, if they get scored on, she doesn't even spend a moment feeling bad about it. She hops right up. She gives April a big high five and a hug, and they get right back into game mode. She's back into focusing on what the next play is going to be. And that's why she wins, I think. Like, she doesn't spend time and energy feeling bad about things and getting down about it. She is so strong in believing that she will win and that her team will do great. And it's not in an arrogant way at all. Like, she's just so strong. And I love to see that in a female athlete. And it just reminds me of how powerful our minds are to be determined and to believe in ourselves. And we really can do anything that we set our minds to if we're so strong and bold in our belief.
And I think Carrie is a perfect example of having a balance between drive and passion, but also having equanimity and calmness within her. So she's like totally hard driven and focused and determined that she's going to win, but she is absolutely calm about it at the same time. So she's able to harness this amazing drive and stay so calm and focused that she can concentrate in every single moment and place the ball so carefully every single time she touches it. And she goes for it every single time. Every single ball she tries to get and goes for it every time. She never gives up. She doesn't let something get past her. You know, she tries as hard as she can. But like you said, you never see a look of discouragement on her face, or even a look, you never even get the sense that she's worried or uncomfortable. She's so, no. Yeah, so positive about herself and her own ability. And that
she loves it.
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
This is her element, you know, like this is where she really shines, is competition, and in a really healthy way where it's fun for her. She's strong in it, and it brings out the best in her when she's in competition. And I can't say that for a lot of people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and you and I had talked before about, just imagine if we were able to achieve that same state that she's in, of this powerful drive and passion, and yet staying confident and positive and calm in every moment as we move ahead with that drive. Like, think of what any one of us could accomplish if we could do that as well as Carrie Walsh Jennings does.
Yeah, and something that just struck me about that is, like, Carrie is a big enough soul to believe that she could be the best and to believe that she could be number one, coming from her heart and not from her ego. And that's something that's hard for a lot of us to do, is to believe that we deserve to be number one, to believe that we could be the best. That's kind of a scary position for a lot of us. And it reminds me of the Marianne Williamson quote, you know, it's not that we're afraid to fail, it's afraid that we will succeed. And we're afraid of our true power and our success more than we are our failures. And so Carrie Walsh is just such an awesome example of a person who is not afraid to be the best, who's not afraid to keep going out there, even into like her 40s, and be the best. And you know what? If she does ever lose, you know, an Olympic match or whatever, she wouldn't let it faze her. I don't think even for a moment. Like, she would just get revved up to go back out there again. And what a cool example of such a powerful soul.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And as you said, so she embodies her greatness fully, in such a beautiful way. And I really believe each one of us is meant to do that as well. Each one of us is meant to discover our own greatness and then to fully embody it and be empowered by it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, 2016 Olympics. They have so inspired me. Like, even my workouts, I've been running a little harder, running a little longer, just thinking about all these Olympians. And plenty of them are older than me, plenty of them are younger than me, and it's just so cool to see, like, the world coming together for something so positive. And I haven't heard about ISIS lately. I haven't heard about terrorist attacks lately. I've been hearing about all of the amazing stories of these incredible souls around the world who are competing in the Olympics.
Yeah, definitely. It's been an incredible little break that we've had, and I'm really grateful for it. And just feeling so much admiration and love for all of these athletes and for how hard they've worked and how much of themselves they put into their sport and their preparation and their competition.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hope you guys also gained some awesome lessons from our little summation of the Olympics so far. And, leave us a comment if you have any other stories you'd like to add to the mix of amazing, inspiring stories from the Olympics this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Go to our show notes page on itsjustlifepodcast.com and leave some comments for us there. We'd love to hear what has inspired you about the Olympics this year. And hope you've enjoyed watching it as much as we have and enjoyed listening to us talk about it, because it's been really fun for us to share our favorite stories with you.
Absolutely. We will see you guys next time on It's Just Life Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We love you and have a great week.
Yeah, goodbye.
Thanks for listening to It's Just Life Podcast. Be sure to tune in to our weekly episodes, share them with your friends, and leave us a comment. Until next time, remember, it's just life.